Welcome to the Year Late Podcast, episode number 31. That was really great, the way I just said that. It's amazing.
There's a little Arnold in the end there.
31! Yeah. 31!
Today we have a very special guest, Chip Chantry, who is like by far one of my favorite people.
He was a delight.
He's a good guy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he was great.
You can follow him on Twitter. It's at Chip Chantry. He writes for a new awesome show called Crazy Talk, which is on the CW and the Oxygen Network here in Philly. I think it airs weekdays at 5 p.m., around 5 p.m., 4:30, 5 p.m. on CW. And you can catch it again on Oxygen around 7 p.m. he's one of the funniest dudes. I said this in the episode. His Twitter, his social media presence is the best thing. Like, if you're not following him, you're definitely missing out.
Yeah.
He makes me laugh at least 3 times a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I never talked to him in person. He actually has a restraining order. So yeah, it was weird doing
this. Not allowed to contact him.
A satellite interview this time.
it was crystal clear.
Yeah. Oh, and he, one thing real quick I wanted to plug up top. He also has a comedy album out called Across from the Adonis. And it's available on iTunes and the other stores online.
Wherever you can buy stuff.
You should go buy it because it's a really funny album. He's a good guy. And we talked a lot about comedy. This is a very comedy heavy podcast.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that.
No, it was very interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I don't know why having trouble speaking.
It was kippa. It was kippa.
If this is your first time listening to the Early Podcast, thank you for listening. Thanks for downloading. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Please rate us. Give us 5 stars. Tell your mom about us. We're pretty cool. if you have any questions, comments, concerns, anybody you want us to interview in the future, any leads, give us
if you know anybody.
Yeah, shoot us an email at yourlatepodcast@gmail.com.
And you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/yourlatepodcast and on Twitter at @your_late.
Is there any shows you got coming up?
I have a show this Friday at the Tap Room in Morton. I forgot where it was.
Nice.
Friday, December 4th at the Tap Room in Morton. I'll be with Last Call Casualty. And you can come see us play music all night.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock start.
Yeah.
9:30.
You can catch me every Wednesday at the Philly Improv Theater doing improv make-em-ups with 1816. we're a fun time.
Yeah.
We're a good time. We're a good time.
Good time.
We're a good time. So let's not waste any more time and get into this
with
episode.
With nothing further ado.
With the best, the only, the king of, crab fries. I don't know.
Is that his new title?
Sure. Chip, do you mind if we bill you as the king of crab fries?
Sure.
Okay. He's still here.
Yeah.
No. All right, cool. Let's get this started.
Enjoy.
Laughcast.com presents...
Yeah.
Chris Scamuffa is leaving the room now.
I'd love to continue that conversation later.
Laugh.com presents.
We have that in there. Now they get 2 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. So normally we just start having a conversation, but now we know we're recording.
How are you today?
doing well, Chip. How about yourself?
Excellent. Weather.
How about you, Bubba?
I'm doing wonderful.
Are you drinking tea?
Yes.
Did you stop at a Days Inn? What is
no,
that?
No, I stopped. It's gas station tea.
Oh.
Yeah, it does look. Yeah, it's the Lipton. Yeah. We're going to. The bottom of the barrel. It's just like a sack of barley.
So, yeah,
that's all it is.
We'll see how it immediately turned dark brown. So maybe it's...
That's potent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See what happens. I've been sick for like 2 weeks, so I can't...
Have you really?
Yeah, I can't shake it. I don't know what it is.
Good thing you just... Did we shake hands?
Yeah, I'm eyeing the room for hand sanitizer as we speak.
Oh, no. I'm on Z-Pack. Your guys...
Oh, good. All right. Oh. You got the pack.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's not working.
Yeah.
I think I'm turning into a germaphobe.
Like, can you check your hand?
I keep like a giant bottle of hand sanitizer in my car now.
Well, which is weird because I'm definitely a germaphobe, and there are a lot of comedians who are germaphobes or hypochondriacs. Why am I blanking on his name? From Deal or No Deal.
Howie Mandel.
I was
thinking the same thing.
I think
yeah.
Steve Martin is.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of guys, and here's my theory, if you will, with comedians
of
and that.
Course.
when I had my teaching job, I was teaching all week. You know, of course, I'm around kids when I was doing that. And so I had to teach all week. And it's a pain in the ass to get sub plans if you're out. And it's just it's a real pain. So you never wanted to be out. And then I had shows every weekend. So it was like I could never be sick. So I was always so concerned that I was like, I can't be sick. So then I really started like washing my hands all the time and being a total germaphobe. Like before I wasn't, but I don't know if it's comedy, it's Lee's, it's like you need your voice, you need to be on. Yeah. And it's like I can't miss a gig, so like I better not be sick.
I think he's
he's going
just
to wash his hands right now. Sprayed his Lysol on those hands. That's great. I thought he was when he took the headphones off. I thought he was walking out of the room.
I thought he was like that was his version of dropping the mic.
Goodbye. This has been a lovely interview.
Yo, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do my germaphobe bit, and I'm going to walk this bitch.
Oh my god. I hope that subconsciously I didn't start this because of like Howie Mandel and Steve Martin.
Right.
And I was like, oh well, they're germaphobes, so I guess I have.
I guess I should be too.
Now I'm funnier, right?
Right. I'm just gonna start roofing women in the 60s. That'll get me there.
Yeah. Fast track. All right, so let's talk about you, Mr. Chantry.
Yeah.
So you just mentioned you were a teacher.
I was.
How long were you a teacher for?
14 years.
14 years.
14 years, oh, wow. American.
Does that mean you could have, like, taken kids all the way from first grade all the way through graduation?
Yeah. I mean, like, I did the math. Somebody asked me the other day. I think the oldest kids that I had, they're teaching, like, they're, like, 25, 26 now.
Wow.
So how old are you?
Don't worry about it.
No, seriously. How old?
I'm 28.
You're 28. So, yeah, so you're just a little bit older. You would have been like a middle schooler when I started.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
That's insane.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You're like a vampire.
Yeah.
You're like a Robert Pattinson.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, very pale skin.
That's what it is.
For.
Yeah. I don't.
What age group?
Fourth grade. Fourth grade. So okay. 9, 10-year-olds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was a good age group. I was
molding young minds.
Yes.
That has to be a good practice ground for like drunk audiences. Guys, here we go.
It is. Like I definitely have a lot of skills that I had in the classroom that I brought to comedy, like dealing with like hecklers and people that are talking. Like you know, they always say like when you deal with like a heckler, somebody's talking across, somebody's being an asshole, you start nice and then you get meaner and meaner.
You
can't go over the top right away. Yeah. And honestly, I do this one thing where and it's a teaching thing, where if somebody's talking in the crowd, they're chit-chatting, I will just turn. I won't say anything, but I will turn and I will direct it. And most other people in the crowd don't realize it's happening. Every once in a while, somebody will pick up on it. But I will just, if you're at the second table and you're talking, I will direct the joke directly to you, and I will just stare at you until you stare back at me, and then I will just tell the rest of the joke to you. And it gets so many grown people just, it's because I just kind of have this, like, I do have this, like, fear of God look that I can give to people.
Yeah.
And
no, I've seen it.
Yeah. And but all you do is give them that look, and you tell, and then 9 times out of 10, they realize what they're doing, and they it kind of jolts them, and they snap out of it, and then I just direct the joke to them, and then I just turn away, and I just, and then it's never a problem again. But yeah, there's definitely a certain amount of crowd control.
Do you feel like you can't control, because you have like a happier persona?
Yeah,
you're one of the happier personas on stage. So do you feel like, I heard Brian Regan talking about this on a podcast where he said he feels like he can't address hecklers.
I feel like it's hard because but I can also get very angry quickly.
Yeah.
And I used to, my temper used to, I used to get mad at people on stage and I'd scream. And then all of a sudden it's like, it's so hard to backtrack, you know?
Yeah.
So I really try to avoid it anymore, or like try to make it nice, or do like subtle things like those tools.
Mm-hmm.
Like another thing, I think I know Todd Glass does this, and I think Paul F. Tompkins taught me this. When like, instead of like somebody's talking in the crowd, and by the way, people always ask like, hecklers aren't nearly as bad as people talking in the crowd. People talking in the crowd is much more pervasive. It happens so much more often. And if somebody's heckling, at least they're engaged.
Yeah.
Right. At least they're talking to you. At least they if you're just talking to your husband or your wife or whatever, you're not even engaged in the show, and then you're just annoying everyone around you, and it's throwing you off on stage. So so instead of like trying to talk over people and like get louder and really like talk over them, is like, don't complete, just like totally retreat, pull the mic down and just like step away from the mic.
Yeah.
Talk a little quieter. And then all of a sudden everybody has to lean in and listen to you more. And the room gets quiet except for that person that's talking, because they don't realize what's going on. All of a sudden, it's you can hear a pin drop, and all it is my soft voice and their loud voice. And again, 9 times out of 10, they realize what they're doing, and they stop, and it's over. And then I just pull the mic back up, and you go right back into it. And sometimes you like, I'll do it again. And, like, even sometimes, like, I'll see it, and, like, Todd does it, I know, and, like, I'll do it. And then somebody will be like, we can't hear you. I'm like, yeah, because she's fucking talking. And then, like, so that's kind of your in.
Yeah.
And then, like, then you can go for that, like, a second time. So if you back off and you talk more quietly, it makes people come to you, and it makes them stick out like a sore thumb. Oh, yeah, and also, sometimes, like, I'll do this. I'll go off mic sometimes, like, at the end, like, if I'm telling a story. You know, kind of like Birbiglia, like, where's the lapel, yeah, mic, you know, the lavalier. I'll do that, like, sometimes to finish shows where, like, I'll actually set the mic stand away, and I'll just talk to, like, and I've done it at Helium. Like, I've done it in a packed crowd at Helium. And I'll project my voice. I won't be super quiet.
Yeah.
But you can be more emotive, a little more theatrical, and people are hanging on every word you say. So, like I used to do, like, the funeral bit, like, with my grandmother, the Great Clips bit that I do about the barbershop. I'll just tell that story, and everybody's, like, really focused, because all of a sudden I put the mic away. Something's different. Like, they realize, like, wait, something's happening now. You know? And it just gets people involved more.
When that happens, when they say, we can't hear you, and you're holding the mic down, and you say, well, because that person's talking, has anybody ever said, no, you're not holding the mic high enough?
I don't know if anybody said that. Yeah. But I'd be like, well, I will. I'm not going to, like, I think maybe it happened. And I'll be like, I'm not competing with them. Like, yeah. I'm not going to compete with you.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the worst. I know, like, when I've done shows and people are talking, especially, like, at Helium, like a club, like, you're just like, oh, well, I've lost. I'm like a lazy wrestler that just goes out there and just like lays over and just gets pinned.
I know. But then what happens is you get into this like mode then where you're just like on autopilot and you're just like, I'm going to just say the words for the next couple minutes until I'm off stage.
Yeah.
Where it's like you really I fall into that trap all the time. It's like you have to reset that and you have to either deal with it or like retreat. Do that thing where you retreat. So many comics are afraid of silence, which I used to be afraid of. So I would talk a mile a minute and just joke.
Yeah.
And I love to sit in silence now. Like, I don't mind breathing between jokes.
Yeah.
Because it's a confidence thing. If you have confidence in your jokes that your next joke's going to be good, sit in it. Just wait for it. And I don't do it nearly as much as I should. But you let that silence, you let the room reset. And then a lot of times, I was just talking to Steve Swann about this last night, where if you have a bit that doesn't, it's kind of a non sequitur and it doesn't really go with the flow of what you were just talking about, and some people were I used to be so big on segues. It's like, well, I was talking about my parents and now I want to talk about school, and it's like, well, I'm not a parent, but my parents, and then I went to school one time, and as you come up with this convoluted bullshit,
yeah,
where it's like you tell the joke about your parents, let the laughter die down, take a breath,
yeah,
and be like, you know, so I'm a school teacher, boom, and it's right,
and you're in it. Yeah,
right. And you watch any late night set, you know, they have 4 or 5 minutes, you know, Conan or Late Show, whatever it is. And they jump from one topic to another just by taking a breath. And we're all adults. Like, we can figure that, oh, he's talking about a different topic now. Yeah, like, it's one thing if you're really, like, you're talking about the presidential election, presidential election, and then all of a sudden you start talking about dogs. If there's no break there, it's weird. But, like, take a little breather.
Yeah.
And then just be like, oh, so I got a dog. And then people are like, okay, he's talking about dogs.
Your Ben Carson joke last night almost murdered somebody in the audience.
Why? Because they laughed so hard?
They were laughing so hard. You were about 4 jokes past it, and this one person was
still
just
laughing. Are you serious? Where were they?
They were next to your buddy.
Okay.
Next to the sound booth.
Okay. Yeah, it was, and I thought that joke was a little weird because, and it's such a weird thing because Ben Carson is African-American, and I made a joke, the joke is, I was going through kind of the presidential candidates and talking about how Trump's an asshole, and I was talking about Bernie Sanders. I was like, and like voting for Ben Carson is, it's kind of like saying, hey, let's let the dog drive, you know, because he's crazy.
Yeah.
But then you're like, oh, did people think that was like a racist? You know what I mean? It's like, it has nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do with race. Yeah.
Right. But and then it makes me go back to think, it's like, okay, well, what about like these Obama jokes? Because when I see somebody making fun of Obama or something like that for all these years, it's like, if they say something that's borderline, I'm like, oh, they're racist.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, they're just a person and everybody has flaws and you're making fun of somebody. So it was a weird, I didn't, when I wrote it, it had nothing to do with that, but I was like, oh, maybe that's what people will go to in their minds. So it was a weird joke.
Yeah. Hmm. Do you have anything you
want? I'm just
Bubba, how's the tea? It's
actually it's pretty potent.
Would you like to give a plug to ExxonMobil or whatever the
Yeah, it was ExxonMobil.
Was it ExxonMobil? Was that what it was? I can spot an ExxonMobil.
Corner of Fairview and McDade Boulevard.
And they definitely stole those cups from like the Marriott.
Yeah,
like,
well, yeah, there were six different cups.
Right. They went to like the Continental Breakfast at like 10:30 a.m. and just like grabbed a sleeve of them.
Like they didn't even have like a tea bag section. It was just a ripped open bag just sitting on them.
That's all it is. Yeah.
it was just like here you go, trash bag.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. So how long have you been sick?
Since my last show.
Yeah. Like
for 2 weeks, yeah. And so I have another show next week.
Since Tom and Jerry's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Also might be my last show.
Really?
No, yeah.
You're like, oh great, I'm doing this.
Yeah, I know. Oh, they don't listen.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said you've been teaching for 14 years.
It's so weird, because I would always, a lot of times, for so many years, if I talked about teaching in my set, which I didn't talk a lot about it, but I got some bits about teaching. A lot of times, I would put it in the past tense. I would say that I used to be a teacher, just because it would confuse people. And like, I feel like people, whenever you say you have a day job on stage, I think a lot of people are like, oh, he's not a real comedian. Like,
right.
And so I would just put it in the past tense. And now, for the last like 5 months, I've actually been able to put it in the past tense, which is weird. So,
yeah.
So I used to be a teacher. I used to say I used to be a teacher, and it was always weird. And now I can actually used to be a teacher. Yeah.
Did you cry the first time you did it? And you said, I used to be a teacher? And you realized you used to be a teacher?
Yes, I think I did. I was also listening to the Adele album at the same time.
That
had something to do with it.
They do the same thing with musicians. I ran into that like a month ago. I was playing up at a bar up in Phoenixville. And some lady like got super judgmental after like in between sets when she was like, "So you guys don't do this for a living?"
Like, oh God,
lady, this bar pays us like jump change.
What are you like, Molly Maguire's or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Yeah, that's actually exactly
is that where it was.
Yeah,
of course,
that's exactly where it was.
Yeah.
And she's like, "What? I mean, you don't do this? Like, no, like I would never make a living doing this. Like, you're out of your mind."
Yeah.
And then she never talked to us for the rest of the night. She was so excited for like the first two sets, and as soon as we told her that, she's like,
"As soon as she found out you guys had day jobs,
I know." She was like an older woman. It was ridiculous.
She's like, "I'm gonna go home and give myself a blowjob."
Yeah.
That's what was happening there. We got some weird notes. We talked about this note before. We played a show at Duffer's, somebody they left a note and it was like, "Hey, you guys did a great job, but I just don't get it."
Keep doing what you do.
Yeah.
The world needs more bands like you. That's what they said afterwards.
Yeah.
But we don't get it.
That's, all right. That works.
That's weird.
It's not like you guys are writing the new Peter Gabriel album or anything.
No. We were covers.
Yeah, we're playing covers.
Covers. So that's like,
I don't understand. It's not there. I've heard these songs on the radio before. It's like they're trying to repeat these songs.
I don't know if it's these guys.
I just don't get it. American Girl, that's a Thomas Petty song.
Oh, man. Okay, so you started teaching 14 years ago. What about stand-up? When did you start getting into that?
A little over 10 years ago.
Yeah? What made you get into it? Did we talk about this?
A band, actually, which is funny enough. My brother, he was in a band. He's a drummer, and he played in Philly all the time. They played Fergie's Pub all the time and the Pontiac Grill when it was around before it was Dobbs and Grape Street Pub and all that. And then they got me into I always wanted to do comedy, and I always wanted to do something on stage. I used to do theater in high school and all. Like, I loved it. And they thought I was funny, so they booked me to open for them to tell jokes without telling me. They just booked me at Fergie's Pub without telling me until, like, 2 weeks ahead of time. They're like, "Oh, yeah, you're doing stand-up. Yeah. You're doing comedy." And so, like, it kind of forced me to do it. And I thought I would do it once and bomb and then, you know, mark it off my bucket list. And then it went well because it was all friends and family there. So, like, I got a huge response just because, you know, I was the asshole with all the friends and family.
Yeah.
And then for, like, a year, I barely did it. I did, like, 3 open mics that whole year.
Yeah.
This is in, like, 02, 03, something like that.
Okay.
And then the following year, I ended up taking a stand-up comedy class at the Comedy Cabaret in the Northeast. And then that's when I haven't stopped since. Yeah. So that was, like, 03, I guess.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wait, are we hearing static?
No. I'm not hearing anything.
Okay. I'm just having
a stroke. A minor stroke, yeah.
Okay. How's the
you
side
smell
of
like
my
toast?
Face?
Smell like toast?
Yeah. So, is anybody cooking right now? Yeah, no. You've been doing it 10 years.
Yeah.
And now?
12, I guess. Jesus.
12?
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So now you,
which one is it?
It's 12. 12. It's a baker's dozen. Yeah. So yes, but geez, been about 12 years. Yeah.
And now you made the big time.
Because
you used to be a teacher.
I used to be a teacher. And
now what do you do?
Now I'm writing for a television show. I'm a television writer. Yes.
Awesome.
So I write for a show called Crazy Talk on for NBC Universal. Mm-hmm. It's syndicated, so it's on the CW and the Oxygen Network in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It's a clip show, kind of like The Soup, where, you know, we show ridiculous reality show clips, talk show clips, and we make fun of them. So I write with John McKeever, who's a super funny guy from Philadelphia.
Okay.
And it was, there's two of us and two other writers. And we just write jokes for television all day. It's like my favorite thing ever.
It's been a good experience doing it.
It's been great. It's been so much fun. Like, I've learned so much. I started in August, and so it's been, you know, four months now. It's kind of a breakneck speed. We do the Soup, for example, and The Soup is actually being canceled. I don't know if you know that. They're renewing it. Yeah.
Oh,
it's
I didn't know that.
In like 2 weeks, it's going to be like after 20 years. They do one episode a week, and they have like roughly, I think it's like the same amount of writers that we do. Mm-hmm. We do six shows a week. And they do one.
Yeah.
So it's like just the rate that we write is just
It's
breakneck speed. You know?
So
it's and like I'm somebody who kind of like sometimes labors over stuff, and you know, and like there's no time to like a little turn of phrase or whatever. It's like you write it well, and then you move on.
Yeah.
So it's a really good I think it's kind of baptism by fire, where it's really I'm just writing constantly. It's like script after script after script. You write the script, you move on. You write the script, you move on.
Do you think that's kind of like a different muscle than stand up writing? Because in that case, like, I think it's important to have that nuance when you're writing stand-up.
Yeah.
So then do you hope that doesn't, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, shed on...
Bleed in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
bloodshed.
Hard.
Bloodshed.
Murder.
And it is. I think it's like, it is a different muscle. And I'm worried that, like, I don't want to lose my stand-up muscle because I haven't been doing as much stand-up the last couple months just because, you know, it's like 12-hour days. And,
yeah.
You don't have time. So, I'm trying to get... do more, do stand up more regularly again. You feel like I was like nervous last night going on stage a little bit just because like it's not just that second nature thing that I did four or five times a week for 12 years. You know, it's something that, you know, okay, you know, I'm still doing it, but it's still like, it's still nerve wracking but it is a different muscle, which I'm glad I'm learning the writing muscle because I've always wanted to be a writer. That's what I've always wanted to do first, is to write and then always do stand up on the side.
Yeah. And now this show is in Connecticut.
It's in Stanford, Connecticut.
So you're there Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
And then you come back home for the weekends.
Come back home on the weekends.
That has to be kind of like exhausting,
though. It is exhausting.
Yeah.
It's it's not bad. The nice part about the only nice part about Stanford, Connecticut is is living up there. I just stay in a hotel right now. And so it's like I work all day and then I just come home and sleep, basically.
Right.
So like I don't really have a life up there.
Yeah.
Which so it's not like, you know, when you're at work here, you know, it's like you're thinking about, you know, your girlfriend or your wife or your dog or
the party
my friends, the party you have to go to,
yeah,
or you know, whatever. It's like when I'm working and then I can focus all my efforts on that. And it's like, you know, we work 10 to 7 every day. I usually go in an hour early, and a lot of times we have to stay late or, you know, it's not a weird thing to like stay late. It's not like, oh, well, I have dinner plans or I have a show. It's like, no, you're working all week, and then, you know, and then on the weekends you kind of turn it off.
What's the time difference up there?
It's actually 1983.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow,
Return of the Jedi is coming out. We're really excited excited to see where Lucas goes with this one.
You know, that's pretty great though, that you do that. I know it's exhausting, but I know, I don't know if I told you this before. I interned
at Conan, right?
Yeah. I'm picking up that name.
Conan.
But the head writer there, Brian Kiley,
okay,
he does stand up too.
Yeah.
When they were in New York, he still lived in Boston.
No shit.
So he wasn't head writer at that time. He was just a writer.
Yeah.
So he was doing what you would do. He would stay there Monday through Friday, go home for the weekends.
Yeah.
And
wow,
he's the head writer of Conan now.
Jeez.
So just, you're on the right track.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to be, the head writer of Crazy Talk someday.
Yeah.
If there's no head
writer. The further the drive, the bigger the promotion.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when and hopefully by the mid-80s in 2 years, I'll be ready for it.
Yeah. There should be a good
just
movie
in time
coming
for Back to the Future.
Yeah, I'm ready for the comedy boom. It'll be great.
I think we're already, do you think we're in a new comedy boom right now? Or do you think we're coming out of a comedy boom?
I hope getting into it.
You
I'll tell you
so?
That much. Yeah. And I think it's different from town to town, too. I think, I mean, overall, in general, I think we're in the middle of a comedy boom. At least in Philly, we definitely are. I mean, when I started, there was in like 03, 04, there was nothing. In the city of Philadelphia, in Center City, there was the Laugh House.
Yeah.
And they weren't going to book me. And that was it. There was nothing else. There was the Spaghetti Warehouse, which is now Union Transfer. They used to do a comedy show there, and apparently it was really budget and third rate, and I never did it. But and it was on its way out.
Yeah.
So there was nothing. Yeah. Me and Johnny Goodtimes and our friend Dan Goodman, who's a comic in New York now, we started an open mic at Fim McCool's across the street from Fergie's on Monday nights, and that was literally like the first thing in the city limits of Philadelphia. And it was just a shitty open mic. And
yeah.
That was it. And then, you know, and then little by little, you know, we started doing shows and other people started getting some shows. The Philly Improv Theater came around. And then, of course, when Helium opened, that was just in like 05. That was just like the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And that all of a sudden, major headliners came to town. We got to work with them. We got to see them. You know, they opened up other clubs. So like a bunch of comics got to start to travel to other cities.
What would comics do before Helium?
They wouldn't be in Philadelphia. They would stay in Philadelphia. Yeah, literally, like, they would just run for the hills. There was the Comedy Cabaret, which was, the one thing about the Comedy Cabaret, there was like seven comedy cabarets at one point.
Yeah.
So there was one in the Northeast, Doylestown, Cherry Hill, New Jersey, Runnymede, New Jersey. There was one in Delaware, one in Westchester for a while. So you could do a lot of those rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They weren't great, but you could do the rooms. So I felt like a lot of guys would do that and kind of try to get in the Laugh House a little bit and would be in Philly for like a year and then just make the jump to New York.
Yeah.
You know, like Big J, Kevin Hart, you know, was a little before that. Mike Vecchione, like a really funny New York comic now, Joe DeRosa. They were all here just for like a very short time, got really good, and then just got the hell out of town.
Yeah.
Just because there was there's nowhere to go here. So now there's actually things to do here.
I'm sorry if this is like such a nerd centric comedy thing, this podcast right now, because I'm like really geeking out and asking.
Him. I'm geeking out and answering.
I'm enjoying listening. Yeah, I'm enjoying listening.
He's just all just pulled out life. On a Z-Pack and just yeah, I didn't even know what's going on. So.
Just methadone me up, man.
Yeah.
Man, Bubba's really been into the Z recently, hasn't he?
There's.
I want it to be. I want that to be like a horrible drug, bro. Fucking Z head, man. Awful.
Yeah, I just gotta go down to my pharmacy. It's like $5.
Yeah.
Can you buy it for me? I already gave my ID.
I got them 5 days.
They swipe my card like 6 times this week. Too many red flags.
You're on a watch list now. Okay, what do you think about consumerism comedy? I don't even know what that is. I just saw a headline.
Did you see a headline about that? I just saw a headline about it. I didn't read it.
It's the Splitsider article that said like the rise of consumer comedy, which is basically like real comedy is dying.
Yeah.
And it's just like this like kind of half-assed like pop culture reference comedy that's rising.
I wanted to read that article and I did. I wish I did. I'd have more. I think with anything, with the internet, you know how computers talk to each other, the World Wide Web, and Netflix, and just it's everything's becoming so fragmented. So, which I think gives, it's like you used to have to do the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and like that was your thing. And if you got into that inner circle, you got a special and you got a sitcom, and there was like these 12 people who were in, and everybody else was kind of on the outs.
Yeah.
Although you could work the rooms because people were going out to comedy clubs. Now with the internet, like you can find different audiences and podcasts. Like podcasts is a huge thing that gets, I mean, from Mark Maron to Todd Glass to all these people, you know, Jimmy Pardo, who have found such a huge audience through a podcast. And it's a very specific, to a certain extent, a specific crowd, and it's their crowd and it's great, but it's segmented. So it used to be you would go to see a comedy show and it was just a comedy show and you really didn't necessarily know what you're getting. It could be different styles of comedy or whatever. Now, like, you can see, oh, I'm going to go see Mark Maron. I'm going to go see Patton Oswalt. I'm going to go see Maria Bamford. And you know what you're getting. So I think it's, like, very – so I think there's instead of one giant crowd, now there's, like, many small crowds to a certain extent, you know, for certain comics. And I think there is – everything – people get such short attention spans anymore. They want to, like, on the internet, they want to watch a 30-second video instead of a 5-minute video.
Right.
They it kind of I think to a certain extent sometimes it dumbs it down with certain people, like Jimmy Fallon. I at first I really liked the show and I thought it was great, and it is a lot of pop culture references, and oh, let's be silly on purpose and throw pies at each other, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just not. I would much rather hear people talking and like having an interesting conversation, or making it a little deeper,
right?
I think the picture on the if we could really discuss articles that we haven't read by looking at the picture,
yeah.
But it was like the
I think it was
what was the picture?
It was the lip sync battle thing.
Yep, yeah.
People just love oh, look at Joseph Gordon-Levitt do the Janet Jackson thing. It was cute and funny, whatever. But like, there's
you
not
really like a cheap laugh. Yeah.
There's nothing to that. Like, there's nothing. Is it making millions of dollars? Yes.
Yeah. It's definitely silly, but like,
I don't mind having. I think one thing like Fallon, for example, brought back to late night was things can be funny, but like he made it fun, and it's like all of a sudden it's this fun experience, and it's this party atmosphere, and it's like, oh, all these big like Adele and all these like big stars are like letting their guard down and being silly, which is great.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, also let's pepper in.
Let's not call that comedy.
Content. Well, what I mean? Yeah. And there is, I think there is a way to do both, but I think some people are very easily distracted by look at the famous person doing something silly.
Yeah.
And they can, that can be a crutch sometimes.
Well, we're suckers for nostalgia too. And he's like, big time, like, I mean, bringing in Saved by the Bell and Back to the Future, and like, I mean, of course, like, everyone loves that stuff, but it's kind of an easy, like, it's low hanging fruit almost.
Oh yeah, people would much rather watch that than some new comic on the rise who's got like a Mitch Hedberg, and it's like, oh, you know, it's like, who's this guy, or you know, like just some new guy that they've never a style they've never seen before, or even just a really funny comic who they've never heard of. They're much more willing to say, hey, look, it's Zach from Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than, oh, well, let's check out this new comic. What does he have
to say? Why do you think that is? Like, what is it in people? Is it just...
Because when you're a kid, you loved everything so much. I think it's the same reason, everyone still loves Star Wars.
Okay. Yeah. But I mean, like, say even forget the nostalgia for a second. People would rather give... I mean, my perception is, like, people would rather give their attention to somebody who they know is established... Say like Russell Brand,
right?
Oh,
versus like a comic you never heard of, like say Dan Soder. Like he's a
hysterical.
He's hysterical,
but he's not as known. Yeah,
yeah.
And I think here's exactly why: is because we have to look at it from the consumer standpoint. Like we are comics, so it's like we're nerds about it. We know how the sausage is made. We know these guys on the, like, if I, you know, like I'm listing some people who, like, you know, Todd Glass and Mark Maron and Jimmy Pardo, who are like, you know, could be gods to us and have huge followings, but like they're not household names. Like people don't know them. So it's like, oh, who are some big comics you worked with? And I'm like, oh, you know, Todd Glass, Jimmy Pardo, you know, and a lot of people don't know who they are. To us, they're such a big thing. So we're in the world. So if we weren't in the world, it's kind of like, trying to think of an example. Like I'm not a huge sports fan. Like I like sports, but like I don't follow it very well. You know, like I think was it Steph Curry, the guy on the Warriors. It's like that. A, he's really interesting and he's a great player, but like he's the buzz right now. So that's who I'm focused on. Like there's probably some like really good player, really cool player on, you know, like Milwaukee Buck, whatever it is that I don't know about. But like one of my buddies who's like a big basketball fan, he'd be like, no, this guy's is the guy. And it's like, well, I don't have time for that. I see this guy shooting threes. I only have a certain amount of time and energy that I'm willing to invest in sports. So I'm going to watch that guy.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I think that's to a certain extent,
because he's established, you're going to get a better return for it.
Yeah, yeah. But, I'm like, oh, yeah. It's like, oh, I'm going to watch this guy hit, because it's telling me on the thing, he hit, you know, 12 three-pointers, so I'm going to sit there and watch the 45-second video where all 12 three-pointers are shown.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're done. Rather than, I'm going to watch this, whatever, just like this random game. Like, I'm going to watch a Bengals game, or I think the Bengals are doing really well now, but, like, that's how little I know. But, you know, like, I'm going to go for the stars.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. It's like if somebody asked me like one of your favorite basketball players, like I would list some guys from the Sixers that like I really liked when I was a kid, and like Michael Jordan, because I don't have much to say about basketball,
right.
You know, so other people don't have a lot to say about comedy like we do, so they're gonna go for the, and it's like that Saved by the Bell thing. It's like if they're like, oh, do you want to watch this you know, Celtics Mavericks game
mm-hmm.
that may or may not be good? Or do you want to watch this ESPN 30 for 30 about Michael Jordan?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I want to remember being a kid again. I'm going to watch this 30 for 30 about Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
I watched one on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar the other day. It was pretty awesome. Actually, it wasn't a 30 for 30. It was like an actual documentary.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
They're actually running out of content, I think. ESPN, like, they're running out of things. Yeah. So I actually saw a 30 for 30 the other day that was all about the time I got cut from my eighth grade basketball team. It really brought back some harsh memories.
No, I'm sorry.
A lot of REM was played.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you losing your religion?
I was losing my religion.
This one goes out to the runner. Wait, we have to pay for that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we do.
Good job.
Good job.
Great.
That's why I love podcasts so much, though, because they've helped me discover so many comics I otherwise, because I'm not a comedian.
Right.
But otherwise, I never would.
So, yeah.
Never would have heard.
Hey, Jake. I high five you if I don't want to get your germs.
Like, the first time I listened to Douglas movies was the first time I discovered, like, Pete Holmes and T.J. Miller and Jeff. I mean, I knew who Jeff Garland was, but I didn't know he was a comedian.
Right, yeah.
And now, like, Jeff Tate is one of my favorite comedians, but...
We were just talking about Jeff.
We were.
Like, I feel like nobody knows about him, but he's one of my favorite comedians.
He's one of my good friends.
Yeah. Oh, is he really?
Yeah. He
just,
like,
featured for him in September.
No, yeah, he's crashed on my couch a couple times. He was in Philly for a while. He was a Philly comic for about a year, and... He's the best. Like,
can,
I love
him to death.
Yeah, no, seriously. Yeah, he's a buddy of mine. Yeah, he's awesome. And we were just talking about how somebody like Jeff, who is a relatively unknown comic, he did a live at Gotham. I think he was on the Late Show he was on Craig Ferguson.
Right.
But other than that, he's not a household name.
Right.
But now he's really gaining a following and deservedly so, because he's hilarious.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, like, you wouldn't know that if it, and that's the thing about the internet, about podcasts, you can go down those sort of rabbit holes and find these really funny guys that normally you would never, back in the 80s or 90s, you wouldn't hear of, because there just wasn't a platform.
Yeah, he was hilarious. Actually, it was funny, because the room, when the night we went, it was like a handful of people who knew, were familiar with Jeff, and then there was like this giant crowd of, like, it was like a Jewish festival party or something like that, and the room was full of them. And
You were at that show?
Yeah.
I was on that show.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
I know, right? That's how much I paid attention.
Yeah. That was an unknown comic named Chip Chantry.
I was a little drunk.
Yeah.
I remember, well, you know what? I remembered the girl, Emma.
Yes, Arnold.
And I remembered Emma. She's actually been on a few podcasts I've heard now, too.
Yeah. She was, like, super funny. Yeah.
She was hilarious. Yeah.
I just did, like, I was there. I did a quick set. I just dropped in and did, like, a 7-minute set or something like that. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
No, don't worry about it.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
Yeah. But that was a weird crowd, right?
Because
it was,
it seemed
like
they weren't really paying attention.
No, they weren't. And which is another tough thing, because they had a private party that night, because there was, like, a fundraiser.
Right.
So it was this crowd that wasn't there for comedy. They weren't there for Jeff Tate. They were just there for the fundraiser and kind of for comedy.
Right.
And that's the thing. Like this, we were talking about Maria Bamford. Like, Maria Bamford won't do comedy clubs on weekends anymore, because and like, I know from experience, my favorite shows of, like, a week, like, when I do a comedy club, if
Thursday.
It's like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Wednesdays and Thursdays.
Yeah.
By far the best shows.
Yeah.
Because those are people who are going out and they're seeking comedy.
Right.
They probably know the headliner. They want to be there. It's not just like date night or bachelorette party.
Sure,
or,
yeah.
It's Stu's birthday, so 13 of us are going to go out.
Right.
There's no vested interest.
It's Stu's birthday.
Yeah. Talk about his birthday. He's 50.
Wait, and you were talking about the people having conversations, and actually, I thought the first thing that was that night, there was a table directly behind me where this guy and his girlfriend were just talking the entire time.
They have no vested interest.
Yeah.
And I hate when, I mean, comedy clubs make money that way, because if you get a group of 60 people who say they want to bring their group and have a fundraiser, they're going to make money. Sure, you're going to bring 60 people.
Yeah.
And I know it's not great for comedy, but, like, I would much rather have a small crowd that's interested than a huge crowd that's not. Like, some people love sellout crowds, like when Helium's packed. Sometimes it's electric, it's great. But sometimes I'm like, when I see a sellout crowd, I'm like, ugh. Because you know there's so many more chances of people being assholes or people not wanting to be there. When I walk in on a Thursday and there's 70 people, you're like, all right, these people are here to see a show.
Right.
And, like, we're going to give them – it's the nerdy podcast thing where it's like, we're in a room all by ourselves away from everybody, and let's have some fun on our own.
Yeah.
Where it's like, when there's 250 people, 280 people in the room, you're like, oh, I guess we're all here. It's Times Square. Let's, you know.
Yeah.
And you can still – have great sets and you can still do your thing. But I like having that small, and that's why I love podcasts, because the whole concept of it, because all these comics now, Jeff Tate and all these other people are booking one-nighters. Like Marie Bamford, she only does comedy clubs on like Tuesdays and Wednesday nights.
Right.
Because if she books, let's say Helium on a Tuesday night, it's an off night. She knows that every single person coming is there to see her and is a Marie Bamford fan.
I mean, she ruins our open mic, but I mean,
yeah, she does.
It's cool. That's whatever.
But yeah, but that's the thing where she's all she's all excited about it. And that's what you want to have. And if the power of the internet can bring to get your name out there, like Jeff Tate, he's doing that. He's booking clubs and small theaters and things like that around the country because he's got this platform now of his podcast and Doug's podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he has developed that following, which is great.
So you have an album.
Yes.
Across from the Adonis.
Across from the Adonis.
I almost ruined that.
Yeah.
Saying that. It's sorry.
Across the Universe.
It's a great album.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. You have it. It's on Spotify, right?
Yeah, I don't think I put it there. I think somebody put it there.
Somebody put it there?
Yeah, I don't. Maybe I think.
Is that legal?
I don't know. Maybe I did. I probably did. I went through the TuneCore or whatever it is. So I probably did. But yeah, it's on Spotify, so you can listen to it on Spotify. Or if you really like me, you can pay for it.
You should pay for it. Yeah, you should
go on iTunes and have it.
But the reason I would mention that is like because you're on Spotify, do you get put into playlists like? Generated playlist, you know, or anything.
I don't know.
Like
I have to
Are
look
you on
into
Pandora?
That. I don't think so. I think I should.
You should get on Pandora.
I should get on. I'm gonna do that.
You should be on like SNL.
You should. Yeah. Do you ever think of Jimmy Fallon? I have to do better with like marketing like that and getting on like even like XM and all. I literally just need to send a CD. My CD to Sirius XM and just be like, here's my thing, play. And I don't know why I haven't done it. I just need to do it.
I've listened to that station before and it needs you.
Yes. Well, thank you. Yeah. It's because it's not like it's not that magic threshold. It's like they're looking for content. So, but it's weird because like I will look every once in a while and like I don't even look at the stats that much, but like I'll see that like on iTunes or Spotify, like 200 people in Ireland listen to my album.
Really?
And like, you're like, you know, like 150 people in Australia listen to my album. And you're like, who are these people?
Yeah.
And did they like it? Could I go there and do a show?
Yeah, please.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So,
And how is it getting there?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just magically appearing through the
air. Because I was wondering, I was wondering if you got any feedback from that. Anybody reach out to you, say, hey, I found you on Spotify. I think you're great.
Not a lot, a little bit. Like I have gotten like internet, like Twitter followers, and I have gotten some people that have really, you know, really said that. But I feel like I should. I don't know if like to do a push or something like that. Like because my album came out like 3 years ago, and I feel like in the last year or two is when like Spotify got really big.
Yeah.
So it was like it was kind of like before the wave. It's like I almost want to like, I would love to do another album, but like, kind of get it out there again and like reestablish it. And,
yeah.
You know, like. So people would actually see
it. You should do the remastered.
Yes, the remastered. Like the third anniversary.
Remember they would do that? Like you would release an album and then like 6 months later it's like, oh, remastered. What did they have? Like the engineer's cut of the...
Yeah. Of the Toadies, Possum Kingdom. You're like, wow, this is really crisper and clear.
Yeah. No, I could really hear the hi-hat.
this is really working for me.
Yeah. Okay, so you're on Twitter.
Yes.
You're at Chip Chantry.
At Chip Chantry.
And you're very funny on Twitter.
Oh, thank you.
I was talking to somebody
so
yesterday.
So are you. You're a very funny guy.
Okay. I'm not fishing.
No, you are.
thank you.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody yesterday about your job.
Yeah.
And, you know, because we all just talk about you behind your back.
I hope so.
He's the king. So we just, like, tried to
buy that's why my ears are always ringing. I thought it was tinnitus. But it's just that I got a buzz.
Yeah. So we're talking, and they're like, yeah, did you hear he got that job just from his social media pages? I was like, I'm pretty sure he submitted a packet.
Right. Right. No, that's not how it happened. But like, yes and no. And like, that's so funny that somebody said that because like, I've heard that story about so many people. They're like,
really?
This guy got hired for Saturday Night Live just based on his tweets.
Yeah.
This guy got a writing job with Stephen Colbert just based on his.
And we got together like about a month before you got your job.
Yeah.
And you were like, yeah, I'm putting together this packet. McKeever is like.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, the way I got it was, but it was partially through that, which is really funny. So John McKeever, very funny comic, he got hired on this job.
Yeah.
back, I think he started in like June, and then like a month later they realized they needed another writer, so they kind of went to their writers and said, hey, do you guys know anybody? And, you know, they had like a pool of people who like, and John gave him my name and said, he's really fun. But like, John did like, apparently, and he even told me, like, he showed them like a bunch of my tweets and a couple other things that I've done, and then they were like, yeah, let's let him do a packet. So I got a packet together, like they asked me for like, for like writing samples, like a resume.
What is a writing sample?
So like I just have you should really have a spec script, which I've never had a really good one that I like that I want to send out. Yeah. But like literally, like I've written articles for like Philly Mag, like the online stuff like that, where it's like 13, kind of like a BuzzFeed type thing, where it's like a joke, you know, it's like a click hole type, you know, where it's like 13 beer gardens that we want to
you
see.
You ruin
in Philadelphia.
The integrity of the magazine,
right? Exactly. So I've written a couple humor columns, so I had that. I showed them like Deck the Hall and Oats, the YouTube video.
Have you seen that?
So like, which I wrote, and John, like I wrote this, so, the lyrics stuff like that. John, John really put it together. And then like, and one or two other, and some sketches that I've written for like Dog Mountain, you know, for the sketch show. So a couple of sketches, and then like John showed them a bunch of tweets. I sent them like my writing. I guess that was it. And then they brought me in for a meeting, and like, which is basically an interview, you know. Yeah. So I met the two producers. They seemed to like me, and they're like, "All right, give this guy a packet." So I was up in Connecticut, up in Stamford, and like it was like at noon on a Monday. I took the train home, and by the time I got home, there was an email waiting for me with like 10 of these reality show clips. They're like, write jokes for them. So I spent the next like 6 hours from like 5 p.m. until like 11 p.m. just writing like crazy, and I had like a day I think to do it, but like. I was like, I want to show them how fast and, you know, what, you know, how much I can generate.
Yeah.
And I just fucking wrote like a fiend for 5 hours.
Do you bounce the ideas off anybody?
Not really. No, I just went for it. And just wrote all these jokes. And then at 11:30, I just emailed it back. And then like a week later, they're like, hey, I got a call, and they're like, you want the job? But getting back to what I was doing, the one thing that John did show them, and that they both of the producers, because I met with the one producer for a while, and then he sent me next door to the other producer, and they both brought up the banner page of my banner photo, my background photo of my Facebook account, which is a sign that I made for the Broad Street Run this year. Like everybody makes like the cute funny signs.
Yeah, yeah.
I made a sign because I usually run it, and I was hurt this year, so like my girlfriend and a bunch of our friends were running, so I made signs. So instead of like a cute sign, like 2 more miles till you get a beer, like whatever, I made a sign that said, or it's like, we love you, you know, it's like, we love you, Allie, go girl, you know. So I just made a sign that said, Megan, we had to put down Ginger with like a frowny face. Yeah. And I just held it, and like thousands of people running for me, and I just had a sad look on my face. It's like, Megan, we had to put down Ginger. And just like, just these. So there was a picture taken of it. My buddy Alex took it, and I put that up there. And John showed both the producers. He's like, look at what he did. And they both brought that up in the meeting. They're like, that's what we're looking for. That kind of like subversive, just funny, weird thing. So like getting the job isn't too far off from like my social media page and my Instagram. Like this sign. Like, so like I wrote all these sketches that I poured over. I wrote all these like articles and all, you know, that I put all this time and effort into, and the thing that it kept coming back to was this sign that literally took me 5 minutes to think of, and like, I'm gonna do this, got a magic marker and held it up, and they're like, no, that's what we're looking for.
So you said you're a runner. Did you just do the Philly half marathon?
I did.
Yeah,
probably. Oh, I did too.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Maybe I beat you. I don't
know.
You
probably did.
I think I saw you. I passed you.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember passing you.
Yeah, right at the Kelly Drive Bridge there.
Yeah.
Let me ask you. Did you prepare for the run?
Yes. Yeah. Did you?
I did not.
Really?
Yeah.
I give you credit, man.
I made it 11 miles before my legs kind of crapped out.
Yeah.
But I ran a 2:30.
Oh, 2:30. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's. Are you a runner? Like,
no, not really. My girlfriend's a runner.
Yeah.
And she gets me, like, she kind of pushes me to do it. She killed it. She did like a 2:10.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I run intermittently, like, maybe every 3 months.
No, that's great. Are you? Have you run marathon, like half marathon?
No, that was my first.
That was
probably my last.
Congratulations.
Probably my last.
That's great.
I couldn't walk for like a week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, a little training will help.
Yeah,
exactly. That does, if you work your muscles, they will get stronger.
All joking
of,
aside,
battle fret.
I want to do that. Like, obviously, not like this. But I, Like, I've always wanted to do that. I think I got to start small, though, with the 5Ks.
No, and you totally should. And you're joking. You're like, oh, not like this. It's like, even the half marathon, like, you think, like, you're running 13 miles. It's, like, the most fit people. I'm not the most fit person by any stretch.
Neither am I.
And, like, I feel like I'm, like, the average of the people who are running. Like, there's some people who, like, you're like, they're running a half marathon.
Yeah,
you can do it. And, like, my girlfriend, I mean, she's in pretty good shape, but, like, she wasn't a runner, didn't exercise that much or anything. You're just, you know, she's pretty thin and all, but, like, you know, and her dad's, like, a big marathon runner, and her brother is a runner, and, you know, I
like that why
run.
You got right, into right. it?
So, yeah, so she, I mean, I had always run just kind of for fun, but never like, super far, and, like, I never ran races. Like, I would just run on my own. And so we actually, her brother and I, who both just kind of ran, we told her, we're like, get into it. Like, she was like, I really should start working out. And, you know, and we're like, start running. And she did the Couch to 5K app. Have you heard of that app?
You know, yeah, people have told me
about
that.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that too,
And it's great. I've known so many people who, they think it's this huge thing. It's like, oh, I'm going to be a runner now. And it's so hard and it's so difficult. It's not. Like, it's fun. And the first few times, it kind of sucks. But, like, with the Couch to 5K, like, it's like, okay, you're going to walk for a minute, and then you're going to jog for 30 seconds, and then you're going to jog for a minute, and then you're going to walk, and then you're... And she had never really run, and, like, 3 months later, we ran our first 5K together, and it was great, and then we built up, and I was like, I can never do the Broad Street Run, which is a 10-mile run, and we did it, and it was like, oh, that's something I could do, and then I had always wanted to do a half marathon, and I was like, oh, I don't think I can... I've done 3 of them now, and it's just like, you feel so good afterward. I know you get beat up, but like, it's such a great high, and it's not this huge threshold that, like, oh, only the top athletes can do. You can do it. And
have you done the full one yet?
No. I will say that is the one threshold that
Thought of doing that twice is so daunting.
Like you, and I'm just taking, and I don't know you too well, like, as far as, like, your workout, just from what you just said, but, like, you weren't in shape for it, or you weren't working out, and you ran a half marathon, and you got through it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't run a marathon without.
I don't think there's any way.
Right. And I just, and your body kind of breaks down, and it's, and I, God bless, like, I love marathon runners, and, like, I know some, and that's great. That's just something I'm not really interested in. Like, I want to do a lot more half marathons, and, like, get better and better at half marathons.
Right.
That's something that's like, you can do that. You can totally run. If you started now, you could be running a 5K in no time. Like,
well, 5K is like 3 miles, right?
Yeah, it's 3 miles.
Like, I know
somebody,
like, I've got friends that, like, go for a jog, and they're like, oh, yeah, I just did like 5 miles. I ran up and down the Schuylkill River Trail.
Yeah.
And
once you start doing it, it's not a big deal. There's these, like, little thresholds that, like, at first, the first couple of times, it's going to be kind of be a pain. But if you follow that Couch to 5K app, and there's other ones that are like that, it just little by little gets you. And, like, my girlfriend, I'm never gonna be able to run a mile.
Yeah.
And a couple weeks later, she was running 3 miles and wasn't even thinking about it.
That's crazy.
So, like, I would recommend it, man. Like, it's something you can definitely do. And, like, I will tell you this right now, I'm gonna say it on this podcast right now.
What is it called? No.
This spring, if you run a 5K this spring, I will run the same 5K.
Oh, boy.
I will do it. We will run the 5K together. There's tons of them. It can be the spring. It can be the summer. It can be in the fall. Whenever it is, you do a 5K. I will run the 5K, too.
Ooh,
we'll run it together.
I want to throw my hat in there, too.
All right. Yeah. Bubba's in, too.
Yeah.
We will run a 5K.
I don't want to run with anybody. I don't want to be seen. I don't want... When I run... You've seen Little Giants talking about nostalgia and pop culture references.
Yeah.
I sound like the kid who has the peanut butter and jelly in his helmet when I run. I'm just like, like, just that wheezing, like...
No, but that's the thing. But then you build up, and the one thing I will say about, like, the running community, you should get on, there's a Facebook page, and it's a group of people, it's a big group of people called Run215, and it's just this running group, and there's the top marathon runners in the city, and people who are literally just starting out, and there's... I've never seen an ounce of judgment. Everybody's like super supportive.
Yeah.
And, like, there's even this guy. What's his name? I'm trying to think of his name. But this guy who really, and he was kind of heavy set. He was and was just, and I think he's in his 30s or 40s. It's not like he's like super young. He just started running and would like document it. Like, he would post pictures. He's like, I ran my first mile today. And like people were like, that's awesome, that's great. And then he did his first 5K. And like this year, he's run like 15 races.
Wow.
And like he's not the fastest guy. He's not in the best shape. But they made him the he's like the chief inspiration officer, you know, quote unquote, of the group.
Yeah.
And like everybody knows him now. And like he like inspires other people and gets other people in.
That's awesome.
And,
that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's like there's no like judgment or no people are like, oh, you're running, that's awesome, you know? So it's a really, because everybody's like, I think the nice part about running is like you can always get better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So and most of the time we're not winning these races, you know what I mean? These professional runners, sponsored guys,
jerks,
right? They're called jerks,
shamers.
They get their shoes for free.
Yeah.
So I'm so focused on me, like, trying to do maybe, like, my personal best or, like, oh, I want to beat my time. Yeah. It's not like I'm going to beat Jake or I'm going to look at these losers. It's like, no, they're trying their best and I'm trying our best. And there's 40,000 – that's a really cool thing about, like, the Broad Street Run, the 10-mile. There's 40,000 people running it. Yeah. 40,000 people.
I would hate to be 40,000.
No, but it's not – it's like everybody's doing it. Yeah, and you finished it and we all did it. And nobody's like, oh, what was your time? I did better than you. It's like – no, we all finished it, and then we all have beers afterwards and celebrate.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's great. Like it's a super supportive thing. But you also do your own thing. I don't like running with people. I don't like running next to people. I love doing races with people. Like I'll do a race with my girlfriend and her brother and his girlfriend and some of our other friends, and like 7 or 8 of us will all start together.
Yeah.
But we all know we're not gonna run hand in hand.
Yeah. No.
We all have our own pace. We all run our own thing, and then we all meet up at the end.
Yep.
And we're like, hey, we all just ran 10 miles. We all just ran 13 miles or whatever it is. And there's not really like a competition where it's like, oh, what did you do? It's like, yeah, we all did it. And now we're all healthier and we all feel better.
Do you do it with headphones in? Because
all the time, yeah.
You listening to Fish?
Yeah.
Just, is that what you're listening
extended
to?
Extended jams. Yeah. No, I got
aren't
I got
you a
playlist.
Fish head?
I am a fish head. Yeah. Okay. I mean, well, I was. And
you what? Oh, wow.
No, like I haven't seen a
what
show
happened?
In a couple years. I fell out of favor with the band.
No.
A couple of nasty emails.
What?
No. I mean, I was in college. In high school. I started in high school. I saw my first show in 94, the Man Music Center. And I've seen them like 25 times or something. But I still really love them, but I just don't follow them as much. Like, the last 2 times they've come to town, I haven't been around or whatever.
No.
But I never did the road, never toured with them or anything, but whenever they came to town, I would go to like all 3 nights, and I still love them, but like I'm not as an avid fan as I used to be.
Who are you an avid fan of right now?
Besides Adele.
Yeah.
I don't get her like song Hello.
Yeah.
I don't get how great it is. I don't think it's a great
it's funny
song.
My first introduction to it was that classroom version she did with Jimmy Fallon.
Okay.
And
I still haven't watched that yet, but I heard
I
about
listened,
it.
I'm listening to that. That's I'm like, good. This is actually like, this is a fun song.
Okay. Is okay. Yeah. And
then,
to that.
But then I heard the real one. And I was like, what the hell?
I don't understand how that. I think just people are excited that she's back.
I think that's what it is.
And she has a great voice.
Yeah,
right. I mean, and hands down, she's amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, she's incredible.
Did you know on the new album after the last song, there's a secret track of her just singing Taps. the song.
It's just her doing that.
Yeah.
She's a mute in her mouth.
Yeah. Sorry.
But she's an incredible singer. Like they even like put like when she was on SNL last week, they like somebody like got like her isolated track of like just her mic.
I heard about
so
that.
So you hear mostly her voice, and it's amazing. I mean, she's
and it's like flawless.
She's an animal. Like it's crazy. But like the song itself isn't that. Somebody said, I think she said on Fallon that like Rick Rubin, she like approached Rick Rubin to like produce her album, and he's like, no. He didn't like the songs. He's like, I don't think you're like being honest or something like that. He's like, I don't think.
Good for him.
And like, she's great. And he knew he was going to make millions off it. But he's like,
yeah.
I'm just not feeling these set of songs. Yeah. Something to that effect. Yeah. And but it's.
We were watching it. And Michelle, like my wife.
Yeah.
My wife. She like saw us when we would write songs and stuff like that. It would take like years to like.
Yeah.
Get a good song together, and then we'd go into the studio and record it, and we'd probably record it like 20 times, and it would take months. And we were watching her sing Hello on SNL, and she's like, man, she must be so sick of that song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because by the time it breaks, like, I mean, we're excited about like recording a song in a studio for like the first like day.
Right.
And then after that, it's like, okay.
Yeah, like our drummer was ready to kill somebody.
Yeah.
For one song.
Well, it's the same thing with jokes, too, with comedy. It's like,
yeah.
I find myself, and I try not to do this as much, but I remember when I started comedy, like my buddies would come out and see me, and I would do this bit that I had. It was a new bit that I really thought was good, and it would go really well. And it's like, wow, this is a really new bit. And they're like, that bit's great. I love it. And then they would see me like 6 months later, and they'd see me do that bit, and I'm like, the bit doesn't do as well as it used to. Like, it used to do great, and now it's not. And, like, my one buddy, the one time, it's actually Alex, the guy who recorded my album, he's like, yeah, he's like, you don't like the joke anymore.
Right.
He's like, you're just going through the paces. He's like, you don't have any energy to the joke. So he's like, so that, like, that's when
I'll take
it out, or I'll take it out for a while, or I'll just at least put a new spin on it or a new, you know, angle on it, so I'm excited about telling the joke mm-hmm. now, you know, where you're not just like going on autopilot.
It's crazy how much that kind of stuff goes into like telling jokes, because like I just finally started like getting rid of everything that I did in Philly's Funniest.
Yeah.
Because like up until that point, I was like, well, I need it. It's my anchor. I know they right. work. It's like, but now like I was going through the motions, and I think you could tell that I was just reciting these jokes that had worked, that clearly I was just, you know. And the new stuff I've been doing, you want to hear something crazy? Is like the compliment I've been getting most recently is like, every time I hear you, you've got new stuff.
That's a great compliment. But, that was like the biggest, that was my favorite compliment that I used to get from people.
I really enjoy that compliment.
Yeah.
But I don't keep anything. I always like, okay, I do it like once or twice. It's okay. And then so I just get rid of it.
Yeah. No, I think that that's, to a certain extent, there is a balance where like there was a comic who used to be like, really, he doesn't even do comedy anymore, but like he won Philly's Funniest 1 year, really funny dude. And I would always seem to follow him at open mic at Helium. And he had this 5 minute bit that was amazing. And he would just he would just kill.
Yeah.
And he just kept honing this one set, like this, just this one set, these like two big bits that he had, and it would kill. And I would come up every Tuesday night and do something brand new, you know, and I'd just be like, and it would get mediocre, or like sometimes like a really good one would come out of it. But I always felt good that I was generating new material. And like from that, you can't just throw it all away. It's like somebody told me, Joey Callahan told me one time, he's like, if you do an open mic and you do 5 minutes of brand new material and everything bombs except for one joke, that was a successful open mic, because now you have a joke that works.
Yeah.
So he's like, if you go back the next week and you do another brand new 5 minutes and everything bombs except for one joke, now you have two jokes.
But you can't do that at Helium.
To a certain extent, you can't. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was doing, I was getting in
you,
their
you want
favor.
To do like once, yes, yeah. get into their favor. And
then I fell out of favor because I started doing that. I like, went through a rough patch.
But and everybody goes through rough patches. And I think you're thinking too much about it. But like, but especially like kind of once you get in, like you want to use that time to, I mean, you want to do well, but you also want to use that time. That open mics are for you. They're not for the crowd.
Yeah.
They're for you to get better.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we wanted to add before we wrap this? Is there any, Bubba, did you have anything?
So, like, what's your salary at this new job before taxes?
Well, I work at Starbucks part time. Yeah. That's why I brought these. It's fine. I was thinking that it was going to be like, oh, I'm going to be rich now, and oh, I'm not.
No.
but it's, you know, but like that's the thing. Like, I'm paying my bills by doing comedy, writing jokes.
Doing something,
so it's like,
doing,
it's
yeah.
like the best. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully if I get another writing gig, then, you know, it's even more. But
and you were telling me you guys got a new voiceover guy at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So which was really exciting. So he's like, so now we're doing, it used to be kind of like the soup where it's like intro the clip, show the clip, tell a joke, mm-hmm. you know, the host would tell a joke. And now they're doing it more like a package deal where it's like the voiceover guy who's really funny. He kind of inserts the jokes into it, almost like a Mystery Science Theater kind of thing. We turn it into like its own, each clip is kind of like turned into its own beast, kind of like a
you know,
we'll turn it into like a mock commercial for something.
Are we allowed to say his name?
I don't want to say it because I don't know.
Okay, okay.
I honestly
okay,
don't know.
Okay.
But he's like a super funny comic and he's fairly well known among people like us. Yeah,
yeah. We'll talk about
that. So I don't know if he's credited on the show and if he wants to be,
okay.
but he's super funny.
Yeah.
And, so
that's
we're really
great.
Excited to have him. Yeah.
Sorry to make that weird.
No, not at all.
At the end there.
No.
Normally at the end of these things, we say, keep it crispy.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm kidding. That's That's a Pete Holmes thing.
Yeah.
No, but Chip, thanks again.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Is there any stand-up shows in the near future that you want to plug or anything like that? Or
not like right on the horizon, because it's so hard right now just being up there and coming back. So and it's Christmas time too, so Christmas always seems to be. But yeah, no. Hopefully, I'll definitely be doing stuff. I know I'm at the Borgata in the spring, and
cool.
And the nice part is like we're done our taping in like March. Mm-hmm. So if the show doesn't get renewed, then I'm off for good and I can do as much comedy as I want. I have to look for another job.
If
it does get picked up, I'll have like 3 months of a hiatus, so I'll really be able to do a lot of comedy then.
Yeah.
I'll be back in town much more.
Oh, you want to plug the show again before we get off?
Oh, yeah. Crazy Talk. It's called Crazy Talk. Very funny show in Philly. It's on the CW and the Oxygen Network. CW, I think it's on at like 4:30 and 5 p.m.
Okay.
Something like that. And then Oxygen Network, I think it's on at like 7:30 or something
and
like that.
And follow him on Twitter.
At Chip Chantry. Please follow me on Twitter.
He only hits home runs.
I do. And they're just nothing but grounders.
Yeah.
Just right up the middle.
Inside
just
the park.
Like in – I don't think I ever hit a ball out of the infield when – I was in when I played Little League.
Really?
Like, I played in second grade and I played in fourth grade. So, you know, at the oldest, I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
But I don't think I ever hit the ball. Like, if I hit the ball, they were usually just grounders, like to the second baseman.
I hit one home run.
Did you really?
And it was in T-ball.
Wow.
So it was on the T.
Nice.
He was also 14.
I was a little delayed. Yeah. But no, Chip, thanks again for coming
on. Thanks for having me, guys.
That
was great.
Man.
Yeah.
Love you so much.
Okay, bye.
Bye. All right.
Okay, goodbye.
Oh, God. Thank God that's over.
We're still taming.
What?
Are we still taming?
Yeah, we're still taming. People can still... So harsh. All right, go ahead, stop.
Maybe
go
it'll be stop. On time next time.
Go ahead, stop.
There you go. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
It's been weeks, I forget.
It's been.
Oh, have you guys ever heard? I got to tell you the story about that. Wait, can we keep this running for a second? You can cut it too. No, stay over there because it's only going to take 2 seconds.
Okay, go ahead.
But you can even cut this. But do you know Ryan Carey? Do you know who Ryan Carey is?
Yeah.
Really funny dude. I love. He used to come to the open mic at Helium on Tuesdays. And the one time we were hanging out, and he's like, "Watch this!" And like you used to have to show up to Helium and sign up there. And see if he got on or not. So, like, from, like, 6 until 8, everybody was kind of hanging out, waiting to see if they got on the list. So, like, the bar room, but you couldn't go in yet, like, until, like, 7:30. So, the bar room was usually packed. And what Ryan Carey does every once in a while, if he's in a crowded room of people, he'll just, like, be by himself, and he'll just loudly just go, "It's been..." And that's all he does. And like people stop and like, cause they think that song's going to start and people kind of get excited. And then he just like, but he's like, watch, he's like, "It's been," and then and that's it. And so, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. Ryan Carey.